Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today we're going to welcome Jennifer Aldrich. She's one of many of the members of the Adventurous Club. She's actually on the board. She's going to be talking about her trip to Australia for the movie from the Kickstarter, and she's going to talk about the convention and a whole bunch of other stuff. So this is a recorded show, so please do not call in. Here's Jennifer.
Hi, Jennifer. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sherry. Thanks for having me on.
I'm so excited to be talking to you about all things Miss Fisher.
Yay!
Well, we're going to be talking about a wide range of subjects, but why don't you tell a little bit about what the Adventurous Club is?
Okay, well, first of all, thanks for having me on the show. For your listeners, my name is Jennifer Aldrich, and I'm a board member of the Adventurous Club of the Americas. And we produce Miss FisherCon, which is the fan convention in the United States for Miss Fisher's murder mysteries and all of the surrounding titles that go with that, and both the TV series and the books. And we're coming up in July on our third annual convention, which this year will be held in San Jose, California. In July.
Cool. We're gonna talk about the convention, but you had an adventure, and I want to hear about it. Jennifer was one of the people who got to go see the filming of the Miss Fisher movie. So why don't you tell our audience a little bit about your adventure?
Well, I was there was a Kickstarter for. The Miss Fisher and the Crypt of Tears, which is the feature film directly from the series, and they are doing. They decided to do a Kickstarter with different levels of perks, and so one of them was to be an extra in the movie, and so I was the guest of Marty Acker, who bought that package level, and I got to be her plus one. And so last year, at the end of the year, we flew to Australia together and had this amazing 2 weeks in Melbourne, Australia, and got to see the locations for a lot of the show, as well as, you know, getting the chance to be in a scene in the movie. And we had a lot of adventures, both connected with the show and just connected with Melbourne, which is a wonderful, beautiful city I had never been to before.
Yeah, I mean, my closest to Melbourne, other than watching the show, is watching Josh Gates go walk around before he starts whatever's latest adventure of archaeology.
So. Yeah. It's a wonderful city, and I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area, and it reminded me actually a lot of San Francisco, both in the weather, and at the time of year that I went, it was spring going into summer there, fall going into winter here, and it was pretty much the same temperature as when I left, and there were a lot of things that sort of multicultural mesh of, you know, the neighborhoods sort of blend into each other in the same way they do in San Francisco, and there was a little bit of American influence, unfortunately. You see a McDonald's as you're coming out of the Melbourne airport, and I had actually said to Marty as we were. We stayed in Yarraville, which is a small suburb to the west of Melbourne, the city proper. And so we were driving. We took an Uber and we're driving to Yarraville. And I said, you know, this looks like South San Francisco. She says, yeah, it looks like it looked like Burbank, you know, until we saw the Vegemite ad. It was very similar.
I know, it's really strange. When I went to Europe, when I went to London and I was on, I think I was in Bath, and they had McDonald's.
Yeah.
How weird
yeah.
is that?
I didn't actually see a Starbucks until I was there, I think 4 or 5 days into the trip. And I immediately felt I needed to apologize to the Australian people. So I went to a local coffee shop, because Melbourne is like Seattle in that they are very passionate about their coffee. So I went to a local coffee shop, got a cappuccino, and said, "I'm sorry for the Starbucks that I just passed." So I supported the local businesses whatever I could.
I didn't go to McDonald's. I mean, why would I do that? You're on a trip and you're going to another country, the last thing you want to do is go to an American restaurant.
Exactly. You know, I'm one of those travelers who wants to experience it as close to the locals experience it as possible, which is why I like staying in suburbs and that kind of thing, instead of, you know, staying at a hotel that's right in the downtown. That way I get to, you know, really get to see how folks live in a different, you know, in a different environment. So that kind of travel experience. I just let myself get lost one day, which is both easy to do in Melbourne and not so easy, because the signage where everything is, you know, everybody's very friendly and helpful, and you need to go down this way and take this laneway, but you can also get lost in pleasantly lost, you know, the laneways alone. You can just find yourself going, okay, there's a restaurant here, it's about lunchtime, let's just sit down and have a meal. And that was the best part for me, was just the getting lost part.
I love doing that, but I was brought up that way. My dad used to say on Sunday mornings, after he made us breakfast, because it was the one day he could do it for us, "Okay, everybody, let's climb in the car and go get lost." And we lived in the town. It was L.A.
Well, it's easy to get lost in L.A., though.
But it wasn't actually getting lost. It was more like he just didn't pay attention to where he was going and see where he was going to end up, and that's where we were. I mean, we would go to places that like Beverly Hills. We would go to Beverly Hills, and we knew, you know, certain areas of Beverly Hills because you're there all the time. But we went into parts of Beverly Hills that we'd never gone into just for the fun of it. I mean, like that. And so that's the way
great.
I was raised.
That's tourist roulette.
Yeah. So I can relate to that. I mean, that's how I was when I went to Europe. Wherever the tide takes me, yeah. I can relate. Okay, now you have to explain something to me. I've been to San Francisco many times. I've never been to Australia, Melbourne, or any part of Australia. What is San Francisco? Like I said, I've been there many, many times. I know it pretty well. What's the similarity? I don't get that. What's the similarity between San Francisco and Melbourne?
So having been to London, New York, San Francisco, and Melbourne, I didn't get to Sydney, so I can't really compare it that way. But New York and London are similar in that you always feel like there's a crowd anywhere you go.
Mm-hmm.
There's no real quiet places. Melbourne and San Francisco, to me, both have quiet places, you know, where you're going to go off in one direction on the street, and you might not actually meet anybody for a block or two. Whereas in New York and London, that would be next to impossible because there's so many people. But I also think that the international influence of it, because San Francisco has, you know, San Francisco has a Chinatown that's well established. Melbourne also has a Chinatown that's well established. There's, you know, you wander down one block and you're in Chinatown, and then you turn right, and then suddenly you're in the Greek area or the Italian area, or, you know, there's that same sort of multicultural blend. That, you know, yes, there are individual neighborhoods, but they all sort of, you know, fit together in this weave. And I also think that Melbourne, similar to San Francisco for me anyway, has a more laid-back attitude about just, you know, daily life. There's not as much of a, we need to go and do, and we have, you know, this place to be, and we have to keep the schedule and all of that sort of stuff. And part of that too is just, you know, the Australian mentality and you know, no worries and all of that. But I see the similarities. At least to me, I felt as comfortable in Melbourne as I feel in San Francisco, and in, you know, in San Jose and any part of the Bay Area, really. And the other thing too was that I felt like there were definite city areas, but you wandered into suburbs without really, you know, that there wasn't that distinction. And I suppose that's a little like LA.
Yeah.
You know, because
what you're describing to me is my hometown. You're describing my hometown. I'm from LA. I live in San Diego, but I'm from LA. And I'm like, God,
yeah.
That sounds, well, your description of San Francisco's missing is like, gee, I mean, LA is just the same.
Yeah, I think, but it's more self-contained rather than spread out the way it is in LA. I think that's the difference.
Oh, I see what you mean.
You know, you get that it's woven, but the weave is tighter in San Francisco and Melbourne, I guess, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, because, well, I don't know about Melbourne, but San Francisco is a very contained place.
Yeah, it's only 8 square miles or
yeah.
Something like that.
It's
so,
very small.
You know, 8 miles across. So, it's got to, you know, they got to put everything within the city limits in order to get it done. But, you know, there are differences, too. I mean, it's not quite so gentrified. You know, they still keep to, you know, they respect the traditional historic buildings and all of that sort of stuff, and it's not as much of a, okay, we're going to put in a new building and, you know, tear down this 100-year-old one. And
don't even get me started on that. I get so mad at LA when they do something. Ugh.
Yeah, but I think that's again the difference between Australia and the United States. You know, that was actually one thing that was obvious to me throughout the travels was the, you know, the differences in just how they relate to, you know, everything is, you know, how an Australian would react to something versus how an American would react to something. So, you know, I don't want to say more about that without getting in any way political. So, but you know, it was definitely it became obvious by the end of it that yes, we were in a different country, and I felt safe. I felt safe walking the streets, which is, you know, for you know, any woman who is walking around by herself, there's always this automatic sort of, like, you know, you have the awareness of you're on the street, and there's, you know, your instincts are so well honed, but I didn't feel like I had to have my hackles up all the time. You know, does that, I mean...
That makes sense. I've traveled a lot. I understand.
Yeah, so I felt safer in Melbourne than I have in a lot of cities, you know, in both the U.S., Canada, you know, the U.K. So it was, that was the uniquest part of the experience for me.
That's cool. So Can you tell us a little bit about your experience working on the film for the Kickstarter reward?
I will talk about the day before.
Okay. I didn't mean to give anything away. I just meant your experience.
I will talk about the day before. So they kept us all as much as was possible. They kept us as a group. There was about 40 of us. And they gave us the, and they being EveryCloud, the production company, we were treated to lunch at Como House, which is one of the locations that was used in Miss Fisher's Murder Mystery. And it was and it's used a couple of times in Murder at the Green Mill. It's Charlie's mom's house, and it's also used in the yard for, the side yard was used for Blood and Money at the beginning of the episode when they're talking about the War Veterans Program, and they're talking to the elderly ladies and trying to get their money from them. But it's this beautiful grounds and location, and a lot of the locations that they used for Miss Fisher were National Trust locations, so, you know, old mansions and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had lunch at the stables at Como House, which is a tea room, and then we got a tour of the house after, and Carrie Greenwood, who is the author of all the Franny Fisher books, and as I said to her myself, you are the founder of the feast, so we wouldn't have all of this fabulous stuff without you, but she was there with her partner David, and she was absolutely lovely, and called everybody darling, and I got to meet with her and chat with her, and it was that was an amazing experience, because I have not only read all of her Franny Fisher books, but also her Corina Chapman books as well, which are detective stories, but they're very different sort of detective stories from Franny Fisher. For one thing, they're set in the modern time and in modern Melbourne, and there's they just have a very different just even a different voice. But I was able to tell her at this point, because of the way that we had planned our trip, all of the stuff related to the movie all came towards the end of our trip, so it was, you know, the way to finish off with a bang. and we had a lot of, you know, things to talk about and, you know, tell her what we had seen, and we visited a lot of the locations, like Wardlow, which was Franny's house, and the Abbotsford Convent, which was used for A Natural Habit. We visited the Fitzroy Cricket Grounds that they used for Mark for Murder for the footy episode. And so we were, but it was great to be able to meet with her and talk with all of these other, all of the other extras who had come from the United States, Canada, a few had come from Europe, but there were quite a few Australians who were quite shocked, really, that the, you know, the Americans would want to fly halfway around the world just to come do this thing. And we all had a great time and got to meet each other, which was very relaxing once we actually got to the filming day, because then we felt like we already knew a few people, you know, and so you're not in that there isn't that level of discomfort now that, you know, it's like, oh no, I know some people, it'll be okay, you know, I can find my friends, that sort of stuff. Because for being an extra on a movie set, which I have done a couple of times before, so this wasn't a new experience for me, but there were so many things that were new. One thing that wasn't new is it's a long filming day, no matter who is doing it, and it was about a 10 to 12 hour day, and it was a bit warm, so we were, you know, in costumes and had to stay in costumes and be warm out there. But that, you know, that part didn't matter because of where we were and what we were doing, and filming in Australia. And I don't know if it's EveryCloud or if it's Australian film production generally. But there was such a wonderful camaraderie on set with everybody, from, you know, the drivers to craft services to you know, the first AD to all of the people who make, who, you know, get involved in making a film. And because there were 40 extras, there were, you know, a lot more people on set that day than probably would be normally, but they just all fit right into the family, and that was probably the most wonderful experience I've ever had on a movie set, or, you know, any kind of set of that type. And so even if it wasn't because of I wasn't doing Miss Fisher and this thing that I love so much, it would have still been a great experience. So, you know, thanks to EveryCloud for that one, because that was a great thing to get to see.
Cool. That sounds fun. The thing that you reminded me of, the first movie I ever worked on where I had a costume was a thing called Thursday's Child.
Oh.
Which was a very long time ago. I was 18 years old. And on this movie, it was with Rob Lowe, and he was in school, and it was supposed to be an Eastern school, and so everybody was wearing coats and hats and scarves. We were at UCLA, and it was 102 degrees.
Oh, goodness. But so you have to look like you're cold, right?
Yes. Now, on top of this, we're all sweating like pigs, and then we have an outside scene, and they have a wind machine that's hitting us, so it's all breezy and with the fake snow and everything. Fake snow didn't bother me. The wind machine and the sweaty, I had the worst cold the next day.
Oh, no. Yeah. Yeah, it's really quite you know, that's really the basis of acting that nobody ever tells you about.
Yeah.
It's faking the conditions around you and getting other people to believe it.
it was really fun, and as soon as I was well enough, I got assigned another day, and I think I worked like 3 weeks on that movie. But that one day I will never forget.
Well, I can say because they've already shown a picture of me, EveryCloud has already shown a picture of me on Instagram doing this, so I can say this part. We were ballroom dancing, and so, you know, in a crowded ballroom and continually dancing the same five steps, you know, over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
I have to give a shout out to my dance partner Nick, because he kept me going through the whole thing. He was incredibly entertaining. Because of the gender ratio, not surprisingly, being more women than men, they had brought in some paid extras to sort of make up the gender balance, so that, you know, women had dance partners and all of that. So he was one of the paid extras, and he and I got along great. And I picked him out because he was the same height as my husband. So, and we both ballroom dance. So it was like, no, I can comfortably, you know, sit with my arms on his shoulders, or, you know, my hands on his shoulders all day. If it had been somebody much taller, I don't know that I could have done that. So, so that was great. And he, you know, he kept me laughing and kept my sense of humor up throughout the day, and by the end of it I don't think he'll mind if I tell this joke. We were talking about the dance, you know, we're now into hour 24 of the dance at the Toorak Assembly Hall, you know. We would just say these sort of things to keep it, to keep it going, because it's a long day. I mean, it's a lot of fun, and there's a lot of things going on, and of course, because of the fan nature of it, it's, you know, an even more intense experience, and you want to remember every second, even knowing that you won't be able to, but little things like that keep you going on a film set, and it's always special when it happens.
That's really fun. I've never done the dance thing. My dad he worked an extra job one day in his whole entire life. And it turned out that the reason the extra people asked him was because he had taught ballroom dancing.
Yeah.
So he not only was doing the dancing, he was actually teaching the other extras how to do it.
Yeah. I had a little similar myself because I had used to teach wedding couples, and so I got called out for that. One of the others who knew that said something to the dance captain. So I think that's why I got to pick my partner as opposed to just being assigned somebody. So I was grateful that I had that pre-knowledge of going into it. But it was really a wonderful experience, and I could, you know, if they need us to reshoot any scenes or anything,
he'll fly out.
Right here now, we'll come back to Melbourne in a heartbeat and come do it again. It was that much fun, and everybody was wonderfully gracious. And there's, you know, every Cloud Productions is a very small team at the core. So the office team is, you know, less than 10 people. So when they do, you know, either the show or the movies or, you know, anything like that, they have to hire all of these additional folks to just come in for, you know, the time that they come in. But from what I understand, they've gotten a lot of the people from the original show. So I think that it was more of a, you know, family reunion for all of them. So that's a great thing to get to be a part of.
Did you, I don't know what you can tell and what you can't, did you get to see any of our favorite actors?
So I can't tell about anybody else, but Essie Davis was there. And she actually made a speech to all of us towards the end of the day, and thanked us for contributing and for being a part of the Kickstarter and the whole experience. And she did say that it was, you know, that wouldn't have been, that this whole film project wouldn't have been possible without Kickstarter support, because they really got to find out who their fans were. You know, there were over 6,000 individual contributors from all over the world. So they're the folks at Every Cloud are really aware of that and appreciate it. And so we appreciate them too for letting us be a part of it. And it was really wonderful of her too, because I'm sure that, you know, at the end of the day, I'm sure she must have been tired and everything.
Yeah.
But she was really, it was a really lovely speech and heartfelt. And so that was, that sort of put the nice cherry on top of the day for me.
Cool. I want to turn. turn to other things, if you don't mind. One of the things I wanted to ask you about is your opinion. I know you haven't seen it yet, but what's your opinion of the spinoff?
Oh, Mysteries, Modern Mysteries. I am looking forward to it. I'm going to be watching it when it comes on Acorn on the 29th, on April 29th. I will, you know, the 60s are, it's a very different era, but there's a lot of similarities, too. You know, the way that the freedoms that were granted to women in the 20s and the 60s, there's a lot of parallels, so I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with that. But the biggest thing for me is because I'm a member of the Adventuresses Club of the Americas, we actually chose our name based on the Adventuresses Club that appeared in the episode, the Miss Fisher murder mysteries, at the episode Blood at the Wheel. And so we got our name from that, but Every Cloud created the name the Adventuresses Club of the Antipodes for Miss Fisher Modern based on us. So this is, you know, I just thought that that was a wonderful shout out to us, and so, you know, even with everything else, I'm looking forward to seeing that. That part of it, and getting to see the Adventuresses Club, and what their full take on it is. You know, all of these women who get to do all of these amazing things and are celebrated for it, and what we do at the Adventuresses Club too is you know, we celebrate all of these the adventures that people have, the you know, their different areas of expertise. We bring all of that in at Miss FisherCon. You know, everyone from people who are experts at code breaking and lock picking, and Egyptologists and psychologists, and all of these different and fashion and all of these different disciplines, and then they all come together and share their expertise with us, and so we celebrate them, and I'm looking forward to celebrating Miss Fisher's Modern and seeing what elements, you know, what elements in there that they celebrate too. I was also a fan of the original Avengers, you know, Emma Peel and all of that, so I'm looking forward to seeing that influence in it as well.
It sort of looks to me like a combination of Avengers, The Girl from U.N.C.L.E., and That Girl.
Yeah, I can see a little bit of That Girl in it too, yeah, from the clips I've seen. It's very much, you know, Peregrine seems like a person who is, and because she's younger than Phryne, she's still trying to figure it out, you know? I mean, what of us, you know, who amongst us had it all together in our 20s, you know?
Exactly. I didn't.
So, yeah, I think there's a lot of that, you know, still trying to figure it out, but not compromising, you know? She has her own set of values and everything, but I also think that she's like, there's a lot of I've never done that before, let me try it and figure it out. And that I think is probably Phryne in her early days too.
Mm-hmm.
So I see more similarities than differences between those two shows. So I'm looking forward to seeing if I'm right just based on the little bits I've seen so far.
And the thing is that's so true. I mean, Phryne has a lot of skills, but she had to learn them somewhere. She had to make mistakes, and she had
to,
you know, she had to have mentors, and she had to have people who were going to try to stop her, and all the stuff that Peregrine is going through, Phryne had to go through before she became the Phryne we all know.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's times when Franny is still figuring it out.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm well into my 40s now, and there's still stuff that I'm still figuring out. And there's, and we get a peek of that in the original series in Frame for Murder when she's, you know, sneaks down to the movie set and tries to figure out how the camera works.
I love that.
So it's like, no, she doesn't automatically know how to, you know, speak all of these languages and do all of these things. It's, you know, she has to either be trained somewhere or she has to sort of figure it out as she goes, you know, so.
As someone who used to be an actor, I gotta tell you, Franny's attitude is the actor attitude. Can you ride a horse? Sure, I can ride a horse. Don't know how to ride a horse. Don't know it at all. But I'll learn.
If it means the difference between me getting this part and not, yes, I can do anything you want.
And that was Franny.
Yeah.
I'm talking about she didn't know how to. You're going to be a director. Okay, sure. Of course I know how to use the camera. Easy.
Yeah.
So she smartly sneaks into the studio and figures it out.
Yeah,
I guess.
And she finds clues along the way because she's Franny Fisher.
Franny Fisher, yeah. Yeah, that's one of the things I actually really like about Franny's. It's just like she sometimes is not the best communicator. She doesn't, like, communicate with Jack or Dot or, you know, let him know what she's thinking. So they don't really know what's going to happen because she hasn't given them any clues.
This was something that really first drew me to Franny in the first place was this sort of, you know, barging in where angels fear to tread,
mm-hmm.
sort of idea. You know, because I relate to that a bit. My husband and I have this thing where he will, you know, I will come up with this idea and hey babe, I have this thought, and it always starts that way. Hey babe, I had this thought, and then he makes the pantomime like he's buckling his seatbelt, and then he will say click, and then that will tell me that he's ready to hear whatever crazy idea is about to come out of my head. So I think that sometimes, you know, with Jack and Franny, and it seems like to me, from the little I've seen, Peregrine and Jane Steed, that there is that sort of like, all right, okay, let me just get ready, and now you can tell me.
Yeah.
Okay, I think I've braced myself, you know, I think I'm ready now. So, you know, and I think it's that idea of the, you know, the go-getter and the one who has to sort of come along for the ride if they want to be a part of it at all.
Exactly.
So.
The calm, rational, and the adventurous, fun-loving, and excitable, and the other one thing. No, let's do it. No, we are gonna go.
I think it's a little like a balloon and a rock. You know, the balloons are fun because they get to wave and, you know, do all of their thing and everything. But balloons are no fun if they've flown away. So, you know, the rock is there to sort of steady them and keep them within a certain parameters, but, you know, it doesn't prevent them from, you know, roaming a bit. And so I think it's that sort of dynamic. You know, I don't think that Jack ever really, I mean, obviously he does, you know, he lets her fly away, so
yeah.
he's not really holding her down to the earth, but he, you know, he does, is there to remind her, hey, you know, the rest of us on this planet, here's what we're doing.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I know, and it makes it more fun, but that's something that the dynamics, I think, are the same in the new TV show, because you see it in the clips. Especially the one in the closet. I don't know if you saw that clip where...
No, but I've seen the ones where she's climbing on the, like, she's, you know, climbing on the roof bits and all of those sort of things where he, and it cuts to him saying things like, you know, you can't just come and decide to be a detective, and it's all that whole exchange of, you can't just decide to be a detective, and she says, how hard can it be? And I'm thinking, yeah, you know, Franny and Jack, the Next Generation. So, because that's the same dynamic. I'm sure that, you know, when it started off, he probably looked at her and thought, oh God, here's this rich busybody who's gonna, you know, think she's Miss Marple, and then it turned into, you know, Miss Fisher's gone on vacation again, sir. Oh, anybody dead yet? You know? It was that sort of matter of fact of, yeah, okay, I've come to accept that this will happen with her.
Exactly. We've come to the part where we, if you want to, talk about the convention.
Yes, I do indeed. Yes, so Miss FisherCon, like I said earlier, this is our third one, and the first one was in Las Vegas, going in 2017, and then we went to Portland in 2018, and then this year we will be in San Jose, California, so on my home turf. And it's going to be, so it's 2.5 days of sessions, everything from the Franny and Dr. Freud to the history of the Hispano Suiza to how to make the 20s costumes for yourself from all sorts of, you know, from material that you can just find online, even if you don't sew. And we will have a masquerade, which for those who have never gone to a fan convention before, a masquerade is where the cosplay happens. And masquerade is the term used for the costume competition and the costume parade. So we do have a competition, and we have a few different categories. Whether you've made the costume yourself by hand, whether you, you know, have pieced things together from the stuff you found, which is how I do things, and or if you want to, you know, be a part of the group doing something. And then if you don't feel comfortable being in the competition but just want to show off your fabulous frocks, you can do our catwalk, which is another aspect of it. And we just have people to show off all their finery, and so we do that with the dinner, and that's the ending of the first full day. Second full day, we have a special VIP guest who will be announcing soon. I can't say at this point, but I'm very excited to have this person come in. We're also going to be having several more sessions, and our general meeting, which the Adventurous Club of the Americas is a 501c7 nonprofit now, and so we have a paying membership, and the paying membership gets voting rights on where, what region of the country we have the next Miss FisherCon. So we're going to be voting on that coming up to the con itself. And because we have done the West Coast for 3 years, we've decided to take the West Coast states out of consideration for this year, and give the Midwest, South, Eastern Seaboard, and the Southwest a shot at it. And so we will then choose the host a host city afterwards, after the region's chosen, and we are also going to be, if anybody who is a member of a current member of the Adventuresses Club, if they wish to think about becoming board members, we will elect board members as well during the general meeting, and they can contact us at the Adventuresses Club, and the email address for that is contact@missfishercon.com. For, you know, information on doing that, but the attendees for Miss FisherCon are both members and non-members, So, but there's different prices for both, and so you can see that all on our website. Then on Saturday night, after the official convention itself is over, we have a special event with in partnership with the League of 13 Entertainment that is, has produced events in the past at the Winchester Mystery House. Is a murder mystery event called The Curse of the Black Scarab, and it's going to be taking place at the Rosicrucian Egyptian Museum, which is a short ride away, and we'll provide the transportation there as well. But it's going to be a fully immersive murder mystery event, and I'm really looking forward to it because the grounds of the Rosicrucian are kind of three episodes of Miss Fisher all in one place. So they're quite beautiful, and there's a lot to that we'll be able to do in that time, and you can reserve your, once you have registered for the convention itself, then you can go on and get your reservation time for the Curse of the Black Scarab too. So in the plug portion of this, go to missfishercon.com and find out all the information. And there are tickets still available, but they are going fast. And so once we have sold out, we have sold out, because we can only put so many people in the room. So and the same with the Curse of the Black Scarab tickets. Once those tickets are gone, they are sold out. So go ahead and get your tickets today.
Okay. Well, we've run out of time. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. I hope you enjoyed it.
I did, Sherry. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.
Thank you.